It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Mark Brusberg. Mark is Chief Meteorologist with USDA, and great to see you.
It's great to be here. It's really nice to get out of the office and talk about weather to people who really appreciate the importance of it.
When we talk about weather, I said Chief Meteorologist with USDA. It's office, I guess, under the Chief Economist, but the business card also has World Ag Outlook Board on there, so quite a few different areas you focus.
Right. The reason that our group exists is because of the World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates Report, the great grain robbery. If you don't know of it, we were sort of taken advantage of by the Soviet Union back in the 70s because nobody knew that they were having a drought, and they came in and they bought up a lot of grain, so they had the drought, but they ended up with the cheap grain and we ended up with the higher prices. So somebody said there ought to be a group watching the weather and making sure this doesn't happen again, and people agreed, and it actually happened a second time in the 70s. And then finally, there was an agreement signed between Department of Commerce, National Weather Service, and USDA to form a joint facility so that there would be meteorologists on staff watching the world's weather. And we get the weather from the National Weather Service, the five USDA meteorologists that there are today, and we watch the globe.
You mentioned, again, National Weather Service in there, and probably a pretty good opportunity to stop and tell us your path to how you ended up getting to USDA.
Well, I began my career as a meteorologist as a student. USDA, as I mentioned, we were a joint facility, and there were National Weather Service meteorologists working at USDA's South Building, and I was fortunate enough to get a student work program for a whole year here, and I worked side by side with the meteorologist. And the great thing was, I worked side by side with the meteorologist. I was assigned crop areas to monitor. I drafted the maps by hand, which is showing how old I am, because we used to actually draw the fronts and draw the rain ISO lines on the map, and then we would publish by hand the weekly weather and crop bulletin. So I worked side by side with them, and I really liked the job. It was fascinating that there was operational meteorology going on at the Department of Agriculture, which is like, hey, it rained. Hey, this was good for corn. Hey, it was hot and dry. This was bad for soybeans. And in different parts of the world, too, because I was monitoring crops in Australia, which I thought was the neatest thing in the world, that I knew what the weather was like in Australia, and nobody else did. And I would tell people, and they really did not care at all, but I was really thrilled with it. And then my next job was doing research meteorology, which in itself was very fascinating, but I was bored, actually, because I was like, hey, it's really nice deriving all of these equations and knowing that you're providing input into these weather models, but I wanted to know what the weather was like in Australia. I missed it, and then I had an opportunity to accept a position here that allowed me to become a USDA meteorologist working here, and I've been here for over 30 years, and I just really love it. I'm now the South American analyst, so that is probably the most fun area I've had monitoring in my entire life, just because of the changes that they've seen. I guess I'm just going to drone on because I'm talking about stuff I really like to talk about. So,
well, and it brings up an interesting point. I want to ask about South America here in a moment, but you were talking about drawing the maps by hand. Obviously, there have been improvements over the years, but when you look back, I mean, kind of take us through some of the progression, some of the highlights that you've seen.
Well, just what I've seen, just the technology increases, because obviously everybody says, well, we've got computers now, which is true. You know, I had a PC at my first job, and I mean, it was an IBM PC with the big old floppy drive and all that, and it was, you know, it wasn't that powerful. But when I first came on board, we would get maps sent over by a facsimile machine. And it wasn't a fax machine. This is actually, if you can picture, we would get a roll of wet paper and put it on this machine, and a little stylus would go back and forth and burn an image. And that's how we got our radar. Okay, so picture getting one radar image every hour. And that was the radar for us. Now, I mean, I can get it on my phone, and I can be driving somewhere and then, you know, pull over and look at the radar if I hear that there's a tornado warning. So that's how far we've come. So obviously the technology has increased, but there's been other things computer-wise that a lot of people don't appreciate. And I think one of the biggest things that I think that the weather community can be proud of is Doppler radar, because, I was just discussing this. We've had just a terrible number of tornadoes in the month of May. I think there were over 500 for the month of May, according to the monthly climate report that NOAA puts out. And it used to be a tornado would touch down, and a weather spotter would see it, and they would send out the alarm. And now, folks, you can see the rotation on a satellite image, and you get this real time. It's just like minutes pass, and you start to see the rotation, and you're able to warn somebody. And unfortunately, people still do lose their lives, and there's still a lot of property loss. But just think of the people that may have been saved because somebody says, hey, I can see rotation. Instead of waiting for the tornado to touch down, they can say, okay, watch out. And they'll issue a warning. And then, you know, some people still don't pay that much attention to it because there's a lot of warnings that are issued. But if you think about it, it's just that the effort to, you know, save life and limb and property has really made tremendous strides. Hurricane forecasting is a lot more accurate than it used to be. You still have that little wobble that we watch, but you know, before the storm hits the shore, but the accuracy has improved tremendously. And you know, just one of the things that the research facility that I worked at, we were working on we just had a handful of weather models, and those were good for about 2 days, and that was it. And now we're seeing scale out to about 5 days in the model, sometimes even more, depending on the type of weather pattern that has set itself up, and the 6 to 10 day outlooks. People used to laugh at those. Now people pay attention to them because the accuracy is not perfect, but you've seen it. You've seen the improvements.
You talked about the tornado outbreak, and really when you think about 2019, it's been one for the record books, and I guess it's a unique year. Any explanation? I mean, can we tie this to any previous year? I mean, do we see any trends there? Anything we can go by?
This has really been an unprecedented year because it's just been wet for so long. And if you look, I referenced the monthly climate report that the National Centers for Environmental Information published. Since January, we've seen pretty much the same pattern of cool, wet weather in the Midwest. It's just a stagnant pattern. And if you go back to last year, it was wet. They had unusual snow, late spring snow. That's why South Dakota, for example, got off to such a poor start with their planting of spring wheat. And there's really no precedent for it. Now, we can go back and do comparisons with years on corn planting and soybean planting, but this is new territory for us. I've seen some speculations, you know, if you look at the outlook discussions, they've linked this with El Nino, but I mean, we've had several El Ninos and this hasn't happened. So possibly that's a contributor, but it's quite likely that there's something else, maybe a teleconnection that we really don't know about yet, or that has made this be such a bad season. I've also seen references to the Arctic melting, saying, well, this is what you would expect. Well, maybe. I'd like to go back and read some of those studies to see exactly if this was forecast, but I mean, a lot of people are trying to figure this out because we haven't seen anything like this.
So is it safe to assume then for the rest of this year it's kind of a question mark? We've got some ideas, but if we don't have anything really that we can compare this year to, where could we be going for the rest of 2019?
Yeah, well, looking out, and again, I don't do the outlooks, but my friends at the National Weather Service do outlooks. The Climate Prediction Center, who are the leaders in putting out the prognostications 4 monthly and 3 month, they're looking at pretty much the same thing. If you look at the month of June, there's a likelihood, the way they see things, that we're going to have near to above normal rainfall continuing in the nation's midsection, accompanied by near to below normal temperatures. And going back to the June, July, August outlook that they issued about 2 weeks ago, they're looking at a wet weather pattern across the United States. They're looking at a wet weather pattern continuing across most of the United States with cooler than normal conditions in the nation's midsection. So, again, it's just this stagnant weather pattern. They expect it to continue. Hopefully not with the incessant rainfall and with the severe weather that we've seen so far, but they're saying that pattern, they don't see any indication that it's going to go away anytime soon.
So you mentioned South America. That's your area of focus. It's got to be kind of exciting watching weather in other parts of the world as well, as you mentioned with Australia early on. Why is South America such a one that we really keep an eye on?
Well, South America is, I like to say it's the 800-pound gorilla now. I mean, when I first started here in the 1980s, it was the Soviet Union because there's still a lot of secretive stuff going on. China in the 1990s, just because they're just so huge and they dominate the markets, because of their demands. South America is an interesting one because they have almost a perfect climate in parts of Brazil, to give you an example, to where they can double crop. So what they've done over about the last maybe 10 or 15 years is they've gone from planting one soybean crop to planting a shorter season soybean crop and then planting a corn crop behind it. And they've gotten so good that as the yields come up in their shorter season soybean crops, the yields also come up in the shorter variety corn crops. They are producing a large amount, I almost said a ton. They're producing millions of tons of soybeans and corn. Argentina also, they don't have as resilient a climate. They're more prone to drought, but in a good year, they can produce a heck of a lot of corn and soybeans. Last year, they had a drought that was related to La Nina. And that's one of the things that I've seen. You talk about some of the new maybe types of information or the types of things that we recognize now. La Nina and El Nino have an impact on South American weather. They have an impact on parts of the United States. But, for example, if there's a La Nina, and I told somebody this. I said, when I hear La Nina, I don't think about what it does for California. I think about Argentina. When I hear La Nina, I think there's going to be a drought in Argentina, or at least we should anticipate that. They had a drought last year because of the La Nina, and they also had a delayed start to the rainy season in Brazil because of the La Nina. So that sort of put a damper on their crop expectations. This year they rebounded, and so they just had a great season in Argentina for corn and soybeans. This year they were able to plant their soybeans earlier in Brazil, which means they got to harvest them earlier, put them on the market, and then plant their corn earlier. And when the rainy season has finally ended, but it ended when the corn was in the filling stage. So they just had a great year this year. And that's the other interesting thing. You see these changes in farming practices, And then every year you learn a little bit more about the climate. You know, you learn why they have freezes in the coffee belt, you know, what they look for. And it's like a never-ending story. It's like being in school again because you just learn things. You know, every time I cover an area, I learn that there's a new technique that they're employing, or they're monitoring their crops using satellites in a way that they never did before. So the information coming out is new. I don't speak Portuguese, but I speak a little bit of Spanish. I get really excited when I see a new crop report. And I go, wow, there's some more information that I can get. And sometimes I can't make head or tails of it, I'll admit. But it's like just interesting that, you know, we have the internet and we just have this nonstop feed of information, and we could just like monitor these crops, you know, thousands of miles away. So, and I went on a tangent again, so I apologize. But it, like I said, this is really cool stuff. I really like this.
And you don't have to wait on the facsimile machine to kick out anything anymore. Somebody wants to keep up with what's going on with USDA and the weather products that you put together. Where do they find that on the internet? Is it available?
It's on the internet. If you go to USDA's Office of Chief Economist homepage, there is a tab there for weather. There are several things that we do routinely that we put on the web. Every day we write a daily weather summary, and we'll talk about what the day's weather holds in store for specific parts of the country. And then there's a section where we distill the forecast and the 6 to 10 day outlook to say what that really means. Is there going to be more rain in Kansas or Iowa, et cetera? Is there going to be a change? So we do that every business day. You know, if there's a holiday, we don't do it that day. Every week, we also publish our weekly weather and crop bulletin. And if you're not aware of the weekly weather and crop bulletin, it's a really great product because my colleague Brad Rippey does a summary of the week's weather in the United States. Our partners with the National Weather Service provide us weekly maps of rainfall, temperature, grown degree days. We do monthly summaries of those values. If there's a special event like tornado outbreak or the flooding, we've done some special stories on the flooding in the United States. It's in there. And we also have an international section. So you can read every week what just happened in Argentina and Brazil or the Ukraine or Russia, China. You can read that every week. And you get to see what's going on. There's a lot of private groups that do that too, but they sometimes use us as a reference. And we're free. Taxpayers have already paid for this, so this is a free look. Somebody might do it a little better, but that's where I would start because you get a good flavor of what's going on. We do monthly companion charts with the WASDE report. We just sort of write like a little summary. For example, if they were to make a change in China cotton, my colleague who's the China analyst would say, well, it was cool and wet in Xinjiang, and that's why we reduced the cotton crop. Or you know, I might write something about South America or Mexico, depending on, you know, what significant changes they made. So we do a lot of that. But that's really our outreach to the public. And we also encourage people to let us know how we're doing. You know, if they look at something, they can tell us that we're, you know, not on the right track. One of the other things that we're involved with is the U.S. Drought Monitor. Two of our meteorologists are Drought Monitor authors. As a matter of fact, we've been involved with the Drought Monitor since its inception in the late 1990s. So that is a USDA product that you can find linked on our site. And I want to say 6 to 8 weeks a year, one of my colleagues at USDA has written that. I'm an author, along with one other fellow, on the North American Drought Monitor. So we partner with Canada and Mexico. So if you're a producer and you want to see how drought has impacted Canada or Mexico, maybe for livestock or small grains, you can see that every month, and we have a link to that. So we have our products, and then we have a link to our partners' products. So check it out.
Great to see you. Thanks for the information. Mark Brusberg is Chief Meteorologist with USDA, online at usda.gov. It's the Agribusiness Report.